Thanks for checking out this podcast from Christ Church of Ornogo. Our hope is that it helps you discover completeness in Jesus. Now for this week's teaching.
Well, good morning, church. Well, welcome to Christ Church. If you're visiting with us today, my name's Mark, and I get to be one of the ministers here at the church. And you received a card. You're either sitting on it or you noticed it, one of the two. And we wanted to give you some details for next weekend, especially for this particular hour. We'll have more people on our campus next weekend than we will any other time during the year, obviously on Easter Sunday. And we want to provide a good experience for those who are not church attenders, who might be coming for the very first time and won't anticipate how large the gathering will be, especially at 9:15, your hour. So if Christ Church is your church home, this is your church family, we're going to ask you to make a sacrifice. There's a lot of information on the card that we want you to be aware of, and we'll give it to you so you can read through it. But a couple of things. Our 8 o'clock service will have full children's programming. We normally don't, but on Easter Sunday we will. So if your family can come at 8 o'clock, we're asking the people that count Christ Church their home, would you give up the best seats and the best parking places for our guests? That would be just a huge gift to those that will be attending who only come once or twice a year. We want them to have a good experience. It's not about how many people come on a Sunday. It's how many people connect with Jesus on a Sunday. And we want to give people the best opportunities to do that. So please pay attention to this. We also have a Thursday night service that meets at 6:45. If you want to come and you've got plans next weekend where you won't be in church, please join us on Thursday nights. It's the same sermon, same event. We just do it on Thursdays for those who can't come on the weekends. And also, we want to invite you on Friday night at 6:45 to a Good Friday service. We'll have one service, 6:45, here in this room to set up the entire weekend. And we hope that if it's a part of your schedule and you can make it, you'll come join us on Friday night. Okay. To the message today, I want to share an experience that I've had that hopefully will set up our text today. But I want to be honest. I'm going to ask for a little bit of grace and understanding, because for some, I'm afraid you might see this as insulting to the text, and I don't want it to be. I want to draw two things together correspondingly and see if you can relate to it. It was the summer of 2016. There was a certain baseball team that I like a whole lot who hadn't won a World Series in 108 years. People have lived and died on this earth not having seen this team won. But having grown up 90 miles from Chicago, I'm just a Cubs fan, and it's not always been fun. And in 2015, the team got really, really good. Young players were coming up. They seemed to be getting things together. It was a magical summer because we knocked off our obnoxious older brother, the St. Louis Cardinals, in the playoffs. It's a fact, people. And that was good enough for most Cub fans. It's like to finally shut up that group of people was amazing. And so 2015 was fun. We lost to the Mets, who then got beat by the Royals, so that turned out just. Everything was fine. And 2016 was one of those summers. Having grown up since 1974 as a 9-year-old loving this team, I kind of had some anticipation for 2016. But here's the truth of what happened. Here's the factual statement. The Cubs won the World Series. That statement in itself does not bring life to what happened that summer for me. You see, that summer, with all the wins and losses, 114 wins, 64 painful losses, I felt every one of them. It doesn't explain the playoffs and the tension of them being good enough to possibly win in the playoffs and then to have every single series be a slog. There was all this tension. There was all, you can ask my wife, I live and die with this team. I've even gotten to the point where I don't watch the games anymore because I can't enjoy them. That's how sad my life is, church. Maybe some of you can relate. But in 2016, sitting in the living room with my sons in the room and all three of us experiencing the Cubs winning a World Series the first time in 108 years, the statement the Cubs won the World Series doesn't do it justice. It's a factual truth, but it doesn't encompass all the highs and lows. It doesn't encompass the comeback in the World Series from 3 games down to 1 and the Indians tying the World Series in the 8th inning when the Cubs had a big lead. And I'm thinking, oh, this is exactly how it's going to happen. It was all of this all wrapped up. So for you, 2016, you don't even care who won the World Series. But for me, to say the Cubs won the World Series doesn't do it justice. Can you relate? Have you ever had a moment in your life where a simple sentence can't bring in all the flavors, all the feels, all the experiences you went through? Now, I know in a crowd this way because I see you on most Sundays in the fall. 2020, when the Chiefs finally did it, was that kind of a magical year in your memory? And if someone says, who won it in 2020? You're like, I know. because you lived and died with that team the entire time. Now, maybe you're rolling your eyes at me and saying, oh, preacher, you can't equate it to a sports team. Well, let me put it to something more dramatic that some of you can relate to. Did you ever have a wayward child who went down a path they shouldn't have gone down and by the grace of God turned back and came home and they're doing better and someone says to you, how's your son? And you respond, he's doing well. But that's not the story, is it? There's so much more to it than he's doing well. That one sentence, as factual as it is, can't encompass all that makes up the story. Well, church, here's the equation. For many of us, we make a simple, factual, truthful statement. Jesus died on the cross, but that can't tell the story, can it? And for the past 3 weeks, we have been slow playing the final 24 hours of Jesus' life here on earth before he's executed. We talked 2 weeks ago how about he was the substitutionary one. And at the table, when he broke bread and he handed out the cup of wine, he said, this is my body, this is my blood. And he substituted himself for us. Last week, we went to the garden and we saw the suffering Jesus and how he asked God, is there any other way to do what you need done except going through what the scriptures say? And God said, no. And Jesus said, then I'm willing to do your will, not my own. And he became the sacrificial one. Well, today we talk about Jesus dying on the cross, and I want to slow play it. I want us to relish this. I don't want that simple, factual, truthful statement to be our story. There's so much more to it than he died on the cross. Who died? Why did he die? And what difference did it make that he died? None of that is found in a simple, cursory moving on. You see, church, we can't have next Sunday without this coming Friday. There is no empty tomb without the crucifixion. And for those of you that are worried that I'm going to get into all the gross, gory details, no, although that wouldn't be a bad thing. I don't intend to do that today. But I do want us to focus on what Mark shows us takes place at the cross so that when we say things like Jesus died on the cross, we can actually bring out all that comes with it, all that was intended and all that happened. So you can tell me, yeah, the Cubs won the World Series in 2016. I'm like, I lived and died with every stinking inning that entire summer. And I wouldn't trade it for the world for how it ended up, but it means, that sentence means more to me than probably most every other person in the room except a few of my friends who I know are with me. And when we say to the world, Jesus died on the cross, may we actually tell them the full story so they understand who it was, why he did it, and what happened because he did. We can become so desensitized to the cross. We sing about it, we talk about it, we wear it as jewelry, we have them up in our homes, we have signs all over the place signifying that we're believers because of the cross, but what is the whole story? And what part of the story needs to be told? Because there is no cross if there is no garden and his surrender in the garden. And there is no resurrection if there is no cross. So I want us to become sensitized to the cross. I want to spend a few moments together preparing ourselves for Holy Week by actually acknowledging, assessing, and relishing what took place that morning and afternoon on that hill. Paul will tell us the cross is a big deal. He says in 1 Corinthians, it's a stumbling block. That people thought the cross was actually the thing that denounced Jesus. That because he died a criminal's death on a cross, that he was not the Messiah, and that proved that they were right, that he wasn't it, and actually they totally misunderstood it. This is why Paul says in 1 Corinthians 2, none of the rulers of this age understood it, for if they had, they would have not crucified the Lord of glory. See, Jesus was placed on a cross, as we all know, and his critics thought this proved their doubts against him. But actually, Paul says, no, it was the revelation of God's power and wisdom in the cross. And in that cross, we reassert the sacrifice of Jesus. So if you're a follower of Jesus, then I want you to appreciate this more. I want you to spend some time meditating and thinking and not just glossing over quickly, not jumping by the ugliness of Friday to get to the beauty of Sunday. And if you're not a follower of Jesus, I want you to listen today to who he is, to what he endured, and what happened because of it. The cross brought him torture, clearly and simply. The cross brought him torture. Verse 20, when they had mocked him, they stripped him of the purple cloak and put his own clothes on him, and they led him out to crucify him. And they compelled a passerby, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, the follower of Alexander and Rufus, to carry his cross. Now, it may seem random. I'm going to pause just a couple. I won't do this for every verse, but there's a few things I want to drop as we get to them. One of the things is, why is this random guy's name, Simon of Cyrene, and his dad and his uncle and his brother and his neighbor, why are their names mentioned here? Well, part of it I need you to remember is Mark is one of the first, if it's not the first New Testament book written, it's the second or third. It's definitely the first gospel that was written. And Mark is actually identifying a person you could go talk to if you don't believe him. And I think that's awesome. He said, go find Simon of Cyrene, his dad's name so-and-so. That guy will tell you what happened. He was coming into town and the Roman soldiers grabbed him and made him carry the cross that Jesus has now already at this point too exhausted to carry himself. And he continues, and they brought him to the place called Golgotha, which means place of a skull. And they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him and divided his garments among them, casting lots for them to decide what each should take. And it was the third hour when they crucified him. I want to use the word torture because when you read the accounting of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in the crucifixion, and you read the Old Testament prophets predicting what would happen and being rightfully predicting them, you'll understand that this is not just, when I was a kid, it was age appropriate to show me a picture of Jesus on the cross and he had a little trickle of blood on his forehead and a little poked hole in the side that had a little drop of blood because age appropriate, they didn't want to gross the kids out. But when you read the actual story of what they did to him physically, the torture that that man went through, it is not a pretty picture. And they brought him and they crucified him. And I want you to know that three different times, Mark uses the word crucified or crucify. We get our word excruciating from this word crucify. That shows you the degree of pain that this man went through. They nailed him to a stake. It was a terrible way to die. It was such a horrific way to die. This is why the Romans did it. They stole it from other nations that had preceded them. But this is what they were saying to the world. This is what happens to you when you mess with power. Cross Rome, and we will cross you. And these were in public places. These weren't private execution spots. They were on the roadside. Jesus was lifted up on a hill so people passing by would look up and say, don't play with Rome. And so they punished him to the worst degree possible to put fear in the hearts of the citizenry, that they would not question power. In fact, I've mentioned it the last 2 weeks and I've been asked several times, could I post the verse? So this shows you the degree of torture he went through. Isaiah 52, 14. The prophetic word about what would take place to the Messiah. Just as there were many who were appalled at him, his appearance was so disfigured beyond that of any human being, and his form marred beyond human likeness. There should be no question now, he was tortured. We're told he was scourged. He was beat with leather straps that had pieces of glass and rock attached to the end of them, so when they grabbed onto the flesh and they pulled it out, it would be like a fish hook. It would do destruction, and it would open internal organs. He was beaten. Matthew tells us he was spit upon. Isaiah 50 says his beard was pulled out. Mark tells us he was crowned with thorns after being beaten regularly and repeatedly and carrying the crossbar and falling under the pressure. He was beaten so severely he couldn't even carry to the place of the crucifixion. He couldn't carry the crossbar. And so they grabbed this man from the street and he carried it for him. And why would Jesus have endured this level of torture? Because he did something wrong? No. He was being punished justly? No. It says in 1 John 3:16, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. He endured the torture of the cross to say something to us. So I don't want us to pass by it so simply. Yeah, he died on a cross. And nobody who saw that would ever say it flippantly or dismissively or succinctly. There was a story to be told. And the story matters. Jesus was tortured emotionally. Go to the garden when his body was breaking down under the stress of knowing what was about to happen to him. He was tortured socially. When he was arrested, all of them ran and some even lied about knowing him. He was tortured physically, clearly. And he was tortured psychologically. Imagine after being beaten to the point of death and then nailed to a crossbeam and dropped onto a post with all of the weight of your body tearing where you're staked, to look down and see Roman soldiers taking your final earthly possessions and gambling as to who gets to keep your clothes, your phone, your wallet, your shoes. The torture was immense. They didn't just kill him. They used him as an example of what not to do if you want to stay alive. They tortured him. The cross also brought him ridicule. In verse 26, it says, the inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." Pilate had that posted above his head. Now, you would think, right, that he's just announcing, no, this is the Jews' king. No, Pilate was mocking the Jewish leaders. He hated them like they hated him. He was actually mocking them by saying, here's your king, and we're killing him. And they were saying, he's not our king. Yet, it's maybe the only thing Pilate got right that day, because he would be king of the Jews. He was, but they wouldn't let him. And when, in verse 27, and with him, they crucified two robbers, one on the right and one on his left. And those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads and saying, aha, you who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself and come down from the cross. I can't read this text, preach or teach this text, that something inside of me doesn't beg him to come down off the cross. I want so much in this moment that they're sitting around all smug and snarky and saying, if he really was who he said he was, he could come off the cross by his own power. I would love for him to drop off the cross and go, now what? But every time I want that moment of justice, that moment of Jesus showing himself and stepping up and saying, you have no idea who you're messing with, instead of, I know if he comes off that cross, my soul is unsaved. I will burn in hell. But because he stays, you and I live. Because he stays, the empty tomb is not just good for Jesus, the empty tomb's good for you and me. And he has a moment, a powerful moment. Verse 31, so also the chief priests and the scribes mocked him to one another, saying, he saved others, he cannot save himself. Let the Christ, the King of Israel, come down now from the cross that we may see and believe. And those who were crucified with him also reviled him. Now, when they call him here Christ, the King of Israel, they're not actually proclaiming him that. They're mocking him. He can't be our Messiah. Look how powerless he is. Look how weak he is. Look how broken he is. This is no great gladiator. This is no great reformer who will free us from Roman power. Look at this man. He's just a simple guy who overestimated his own teaching. They have no idea. Yes, he was helpless. Yes, he was powerless. Yes, he was weak. And he chose all of those things. They were so certain they knew who he was, and they were so wrong. Have you ever been so certain about Jesus and been so wrong? I have. Look at the language. They mocked him. They derided him. They reviled him. This wasn't gentle. And think of the cruelty. Think of the actual lack of humanity to watch a man who had been beaten to the point of death and then hung on a crucifying bar up for everyone to see, stripped naked, and they decide that it's worth their time to make fun of him. And then I think of the two criminals on his right and left who are taking their last breathing moments to mock a guy dying the way they're dying. It makes no sense. It just shows the depravity of the human heart. And in this moment, they ridicule him. Now, we know that one of them, seeing the way Jesus was dying and carrying himself, reached out for mercy, and Jesus, being exactly who we believe him to be, extended mercy and said, today you'll be with me in paradise. But the other one couldn't see himself in Jesus. They tortured him. They ridiculed him. And the cross brought him the transfer of our sins. This is the most important thing I'm going to say to you this morning. In fact, if you want to meditate on anything this week, I want you to meditate on the 3 hours that the sun went quiet. The S-U-N went quiet. I want you to understand the darkness that takes place here. This is how you prepare yourself for Good Friday service Friday night and the celebration on Sunday morning. Verse 33, when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. This is from noon to 3 p.m. Jesus was put on the cross roughly at 9 a.m. He's been on there for 3 hours now, suffering. And at the ninth hour, at 3 p.m, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? There is a lot written on this. There's a lot of sermons preached on this and a lot of good teaching done on this. So I'm not diminishing all of that, but it's so simple for us to see the most important thing stated here. Jesus cries these words out. What's he doing? He's quoting the first verse of Psalm 22. If you want to have a good study this week, spend some time in the 22nd Psalm and read it from the perspective of Jesus reading it as a 12-year-old and knowing that this would be his future, that this would be the moment he hung on the cross. And he begins to quote it. If you want to understand what this means, Ken Filkins is a preacher in Michigan, and I heard Ken teach on this one time. I've never forgotten his example. He said that if he were dying in the hospital and his family were gathered around his bed, and in his final words, he said to his two sons, if he said these words, "I was sinking deep in sin, far from the peaceful shore, verily deeply stained within, sinking to rise no more. But the master of the sea heard my despairing cry, and from the waters lifted me, now safe am I." He said, "My boys wouldn't think I thought I was drowning." He said, "My sons would realize I was singing my favorite hymn. And they would know that that song is called Love Lifted Me. And they would find hope and solace in the fact that in the midst of my dying, God was lifting me up." And when Jesus cries out the first verse of Psalm 22, he is quoting for all of us his faith that God is going to take this moment and he is going to bring life from it. For 3 hours, the wrath of God has been poured out on Jesus. The thing he prayed about in the Garden of Gethsemane, that he could escape or put off, the cup of wrath he did not want to drink, he was drinking in that 3 hours when God silenced the Son and silenced the world and the wrath of sin poured out on him. Verse 35, some of the bystanders hearing it said, "Behold, he is calling Elijah." And someone ran and filled a sponge with sour wine, put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink, saying, "Wait, let us see whether Elijah will come take him down." The torture, the humiliating lack of any mercy for an innocent man, and God turned the light off on the cross. And Jesus suffered the worst of torments. What is taking place here? What do I mean when I say in the darkness, no one suffered more than Jesus suffered? No one will ever suffer the way he did for those 3 hours on the cross. In 2 Corinthians 5, Paul writes, "God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God." All of hell, the wrath of God was poured out on Jesus those 3 hours in the darkness on the cross. He literally took my place on the cross and he took yours. He wasn't up there symbolically. He was up there representing you and I. He took what we deserved. He took our death so we will not die eternally. He suffered our hell so we will never experience the distance from God that he's experiencing. He paid our price that we could not pay. Church, you can tell me Jesus died on the cross and it's a factual truth, but are we saying what it means? Are we holding on to what it means for the rest of our lives? To know that his death was not just a moment in time. His death marked when all time changed. When you and I regained a future instead of living in the pain of our past. He paid the debtor's sin. That's what he did. And our sins were transferred to him on the cross. And when we receive this sacrifice, when we humble ourselves and say, "Jesus, I accept your blood to cleanse me from my sin. You are my Lord. You are my Savior." It takes action from us to actually receive what he's offered us. But you must appreciate the cross to want to receive it. It's more than just a statement in time. You see, we get more than pardon. We get more than forgiveness at the cross. Church, we get Jesus. He's our gift. He's our future. We can only find our completeness in him. This is not just something he did. It's who did it and why he did it and what's different because he did. Do not miss the message of the cross. And no matter how many times we hear it, it needs to be more than a simple fact of what happened. We need to understand it, to appreciate it, to weep with those who gather around the cross, and to acknowledge all that he endured. He was tortured, he was ridiculed, and the transfer of the wrath of God was poured out on him, and the cross brought his Father's victory. Do you have your Bibles open? I hope you do. I want you to look at verse 36. I'm about to share something with you that's really gross. But to appreciate what the man went through for us, there's something I need you to see. Many people believe that sponge that they lifted to his face when he said, "I'm thirsty," on the cross, that often as a body is dying, the bowels will open. And so there would be excrement that would pour out of those being crucified, and it would pour all down them. The Roman soldiers would not pick those bodies up, so they would have these sponges, and they would be on a stick, and they would take the sponge into this vinegar water, and they would wash the body down, so when they took it down, they didn't have to deal with all of that. And many scholars believe that that's the sponge they put to Jesus' face. Appreciate that for a moment, that the King of the universe would have been treated so poorly, so inconsiderately. And then verse 37, it says, "And Jesus uttered a loud cry." Now, Mark doesn't tell us, because remember, Mark reminds me of that 10-year-old boy when he's telling the stories of Jesus. He's like, and then he went here, and then he did this, and then he said this, and then it was over. He's just getting right to this is what happened. And we get to this moment when it says that he cried out with a loud cry. In John 19, John tells us what he cried. When he had received the drink, Jesus said, "It is finished." And then back to Mark. "And he breathed his last, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom." These are the simple verses where Jesus releases himself to death, because Jesus told us, "They did not take my life, I gave it." I want you to notice something. Jesus did not say, "I am finished." Jesus said, "It is finished." The victory. What God had intended from the sin in the Garden of Eden to this moment, God had accomplished everything he set out to accomplish. What was accomplished? The defeat of Satan. The one thing Satan had over all of us because of our sin was death. God has just taken death from him. He no longer owns it. He took away the defeat of sin in our lives. Many of us are so consumed with our past that we don't even anticipate our future. And because of Jesus and his death on the cross, our past no longer defines us, and we are children of the King, whether we deserve it or not. And our separation from God in sin, when the curtain is torn, if you don't understand the imagery, the curtain separated the holy presence of God from his people. And the only person who could ever walk in there was the high priest after he'd been sprinkled with blood and ceremonially cleaned. And he could go into the Holy of Holies and offer the sacrifice. And when Jesus says, "It is finished," all that God needed done was done. You see, if we don't respect what he went through on the cross, we won't understand what he gave us at the cross. The defeat of Satan, the defeat of sin, the end of our separation, the torture, the ridicule, the wrath of God, and the victory he brought, and the cross reveals our victory is in him. This is what I want us to relish. Who died, how he died, why he died, and what's different because he did. I love verse 39. "When the centurion who stood facing him saw that in this way he breathed his last, he said, 'Truly this man was the Son of God.' For all who missed him that day, this Gentile heathen, this trained paid killer, saw the way this man died and realized in this moment he was who he said he was." This is why we relish the cross. This is why we look at the cross. It was here that God made his greatest declaration of his love for us that are lost. This is where Jesus said, "This is the price you should pay, but I will pay for it. I will be your sacrifice. I will be your substitution. I will suffer for you." I was thinking this week, when I look at the story of Lazarus being called out of the tomb by Jesus, one man and his sisters and his immediate family were blessed by this. When he healed the 10 lepers on the road, 10 families were blessed. When he delivered a demon-possessed man and he cast out the demon, that person and those that loved him were blessed. But I'm noticing as Jesus was going through, there were individual pockets and groups of people. When he fed the 5,000, 5,000 families were blessed. But please understand this. When Jesus went to the cross, every child of Adam, everyone who's ever been born, was given this gift. But so few receive it. So few find it worthy to accept. So few spend any time thinking through it that it's easy to reject because it stifles my freedom. It makes me say no. It oppresses my will. And yet you see a man who said to the Father, "I'll do what you need me to do." The cross of Christ trumpets the love of God for people like you and me. The cross of Christ is still worthy of our meditation. The cross of Christ is a gift to be received, to be accepted through, to walk into the presence of God as a child again, restored from a past. He did more than just die. Yes, you can factually say Jesus died on the cross, but what is the story within the story? What are the highs and lows? What are the experiences that makes it indelible in our hearts and minds, that we live differently because of it? That's why I like Galatians chapter 6, verse 14. May I never boast except in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, through which the world has been crucified to me and I to the world. Yes, Jesus died on the cross, but so did I. And if you're a believer, so did you. And the punishment we should have received, we no longer even have to face. Maybe you've never understood the cross or even thought about it more than just a historical moment in time, but it is the moment that changes time for you. It gives you an eternity. It gives you life and hope, salvation. If you've never accepted this gift of Jesus, we'd love to have a conversation with you. We won't force you to do anything. We just love to share with you this story in its depth that you might receive the gift that many in this room have already received. For those of us who have received it, the invitation this week is to relish it, cherish it, share it, experience it, that we may never just treat Jesus as a historical figure who once lived, but we would center our lives around this moment in time so that next Sunday when we gather on Resurrection Sunday, we will understand what the price of our resurrection cost, and we'll celebrate the one who gave it to us. At the back of the room are tables with lamps lit. I would encourage any of you who want to receive the gift of Jesus' sacrifice on the cross today to make your way to the table. We'd love to begin a conversation with you. If we can pray or encourage you, go to the tables. There's a prayer center in the foyer. We invite every one of us here today to receive the gift that Jesus offers us on the cross. Let's stand together.
Thanks again for checking out this podcast from Christ Church of Ornogo. We hope that this teaching is helping you discover completeness in Jesus and encourages you to help others do the same. If you're interested in learning more about Christ Church, visit us online at cco.church.